is 10 o'clock, and we'll have to prepare to start. I'll just give you 1 minute to be ready to start the meeting. Time is 10 o'clock, just 1 minute for everybody to start concentrating. After 10, good morning to all the honorable members of the Public Enterprise Portfolio Committee. Let me take this opportunity to welcome all of you after this long constituency work. I hope we have been able to impact on the constituencies we all supposed to work and help, especially at this challenging time where we are still faced with this serious pandemic that is devastating not only our country, the entire world. I hope we are coping, and I also wish to take this opportunity to pay my condolences to all those who have lost friends, relatives, including colleagues. My sincere condolences, also wishing those who are still battling with this pandemic to speedily recover. Honorable members, this is your portfolio committee. I wish also to extend welcome to the Department of Public Enterprise that is led by the DG, Mr. Khatatso Sakudi. You welcome, sir, with your team, and the hope perhaps you will be in a position to expand our knowledge about the development. This Public Enterprise Portfolio Committee, we will be receiving a report that is actually helping us to be on the same wavelength in terms of grasping and the understanding the development in these entities, particularly the key entities such as ESCOM. We know for a fact that there is something that happened at Metupi, which is the plant that was just concluded this year when we celebrated the finishing of the project there. We happened to receive very disturbing news. We hope the department will be in a position to take us through about those developments. We also would like to get a bit of an important clarity on some of the developments in Transnet. We also want to know where we are in relation to DNEL, having received these disturbing developments in that particular entity. We do appreciate where this problem comes from. And of course, we remain as members of the portfolio committee having questions, and always having those questions, we'll be in a position to raise them again. We also would like to have some briefing in relation to SAA. Would like to be taken through. Therefore, honorable members, we will be getting that report from the Director General. We also welcome the Ministry. I understand that there are some apologies to some members of the Ministry, but I will take the opportunity to give a chance to the Secretary of the Portfolio Committee to provide us with those apologies. But everybody that has been logged in this Portfolio Committee this morning is welcome. I see we've got quite a number of attendants, which is welcome. This is a Portfolio Committee, which is a public meeting, not only our parliamentary meeting, but it's also open to the public. With those few words, I will take this opportunity to give to the Secretary of the Portfolio Committee, Mr. Tissang, Mitchum, to take us through with the apologies that you have there.
Thank you very much. Good morning, Chair, members and guests. The apologies we received for the meeting is from Ms. Judith Chabalala, Ms. Carol Piri, Mr. Kwankwa, and also the letter of the apology from the Minister of Public Enterprises, who is also in Cabinet.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Mitchumi. And then if that is the case, then we will have to kick straight to the department. I think the DG is ready to take us through with the presentation and help us to understand those developments. Thank you. Mr. DG?
To check, good morning and good morning to honorable members. I hope I have been given the rights to present, unless the colleagues in the secretariat will be flight in the presentation.
I have given you the rights, DG.
Thank you. Let me then share the screen. Thank you, Chairperson, and thank you for inviting us this morning to come and share or enlighten the committee on some of the developments in recent times at our SOEs, and also your observation with regard to the fact that there has been quite a number of events that have unfolded during the interim period is correct, and thank you as well for the beautiful words you've shared with that to those that have left us during this period due to the pandemic. They're sad to report that in the department we have lost one of our own, one of the very promising young people who was in our finance unit has left us. And we pass, of course, our condolences also to everyone who has experienced the loss during this period. And so you have asked us, you have pointed a few entities you'd like to hear about in our entities and specific events, and that's what we have covered here. So we are about to enter a reporting period. We have just concluded our own audit in the department. So we will fairly soon be coming through to present the findings on that audit report. And our entities as well, we are planning for the AGMs in the coming months. And soon after that, we'll be able to come and have their audit reports and annual reports tabled here so that you can have better insight in terms of what is happening in our entities. We'll not be sharing any financial numbers, which I assume you appreciate due to the fact that the audit is unfolding. And any numbers we share has the likelihood can have unintended consequences with regard to other stakeholders that rely on the annual reports of our entities. So it's best that we all wait for for those reports. But what we'll be sharing is just our qualitative assessment of where our entities are and what are the critical interventions that we continue to implement to improve the fate of our entities going forward. So that's the outline. We'll share a bit in terms of some of the work that we are doing on the governance front to improve the oversight instruments that we have. One of the critical deliverables that will be preoccupying us over the next couple of years is going to be the SOE bill, its passage through Parliament, and eventually implementation across the SOE sector. And from point number three, those are some of the issues that you've asked us to comment on. We shall do so as the presentation unfolds. So there has been quite a number of initiatives within our governance unit seeking to improve the oversight instruments. And these are mainly emanating from the Presidential Review Committee on SOEs that was headed by Ms. Pierre, that identified areas where government needs to take a position as to what would be the preferred instrument or the to ensure that that we align our SOE oversight model, so to speak, with best practice. And some of these are mentioned here. The performance evaluation framework has been developed. We are implementing it through the SOE boards, and that this is what intended to do is that annually at the AGM, we need to be able to have a sense of where our boards are in terms of their performance, whether they're doing a proper oversight role at these entities, what are the views, for instance, of the other board members on the performance of individuals, what are the, I'll call objective metrics, which we can gauge the board and whether there's a need to refresh it, are they still fit for purpose in terms of our expectations of the trajectory that the SOE should be on. So we are happy to report that work is being implemented. And this is, and others, some of the instruments that we expect to be integrated in the government shareholder management framework going forward. The remuneration guide is in development. Chair, we have a remuneration survey that was completed in 2021. What we sought to do here is be able to have a sense of where we should be pegging the fees and salaries of our executives, and obviously the fees in relation to the non-executives going forward. And this is informed by the complexity of the business that is being overseen, as well as the size of the business. And what we have done is we have looked at this data includes the private sector information. We have also looked at obviously the SOEs in general, and we looked at the information across the SOEs so that we can eventually arrive at the determination for each SOE as to how much they should be paying their executives and how much should they be paying their board members, and eventually get to a point where we are able to defend where our SOE leadership is packed in terms of salaries. Then there's a guide from the survey information that has been developed, and it has been circulated, and comments have been received from stakeholders across government. And what we'll be doing next is obviously consolidating that into a final document that can be presented to Minister for approval to be taken up the chain to the rest of government to sign off on. We have the risk and integrity framework. We have reported on it on numerous times in the past. It is developed, and one of the objectives of this framework is have a fairly good understanding of who is leading our SOEs in terms of their integrity, ensure that we do not have board members, for instance, that are doing business with our entities that generally they are behaving properly. So that is being implemented across our SOEs. We are doing another iteration of reviewing our memorandums of incorporation to ensure that they are aligned with the objectives that we set for ourselves, and this work is being led by the governance unit and governance and legal unit in the department. So as we said earlier, the big deliverable for us is to have the draft of the SOE bill by the end of this year. So the colleagues are leading this work. Advocate Makube, who is on the call with us this morning, is leading that work. We are in the midst of ensuring we bring in all the resources required to get on with this particular work. We believe that over the last couple of years, including the work that the PLC has done, we have a good sense of which areas should be addressed in the policy and the bill going forward. In the rest of this financial year, we expect to have policy options articulated, evaluated, and presented to the principals to be able to make a choice as to the direction we should be going. And one of the important decisions that needs to be made is what kind of ownership model are we going to have? There's a couple of these models, but generally they fall into three broad areas. You either have a centralized model, which the countries like China and Singapore has, and the Vietnamese have a model along those lines. Then you also have what we call a hybrid model, where you have entities that report to a central function, which looks like a DPE, or you have entities that are reporting within policy departments. And then the third model that we have around the world is what I'll call the decentralized model, which you have entities reporting literally across government. We must say that the trend, as we have seen them across the world, is to move towards a centralized model where you can be able to ensure synergies across your portfolio, where you can ensure that you have uniform standards across the portfolio. And most importantly, is to ensure that the roles of the various parts of government are very clearly defined. You have policy department, you have regulators, you have shareholder authorities, and so on. So that if you do not find yourself in a situation where you have the same institution playing a shareholder role, but also expect to play a policy and regulator role. So what tends to happen is that there isn't a conflict of interest that needs to be managed in those instances. And what is has been the observation as well is that you don't necessarily get the best value out of your portfolio of SOEs in that particular way. But obviously the studies will tell us which should be the way that we should be going. The institutional arrangement needs to be determined. We have now the Presidential SOE Council. So we need to be able to determine what kind of oversight authority we should have over SOEs in general. And there was from the PRC, there was a talk of like a Council of Ministers, for instance, that would be entrusted with oversight over the entities. So we'll have to decide what kind of structures we are going to have in place. And for instance, so if just continue to have a central authority, like, for instance, DP, should it be a department, should it be an agency, should it be a holding company? So those are some of the key questions that will need to be answered. We also need to be able to categorize these entities. Basically, on the extreme left, you could have, for instance, commercial entities that are free to operate in the market. They determine their own strategy, their own investment plans, and they are held to account based on governance, for instance, and return on investment by the central authority. On the other hand, you have entities that have a public mandate, a delivery of public goods, for instance, that cannot be allowed to be reckless or to chase returns at all costs. So the question then would be, what would you call those? How do you categorize them? And most importantly, what sort of, for instance, investment mandates would they have, for instance? And there's obviously other determinations that can flow from that based on categorization. We have had a number of commissions, Chair, that have looked at mismanagement, that has looked at instances of corruption across our entities. The lessons from all those commissions need to be integrated into both the policy framework as well as the legislation going forward to ensure that we manage some of the risks that have been identified in those particular commissions. And of course, in the same vein, we also need to learn from other countries in terms of how they have ensured they have leadership and oversight mechanisms that the public can trust. We must ensure that we are able to get competent people into the system and with whose integrity is not in question. So the appointment of those, how they are appointed is also very important. So the South Africans, obviously, as this will be, there will be a strong public participation mechanism to this. We'll need to be able to say, to have to say what sort of appointment process should be in place for both boards and executives. And there needs to be a clear demarcation of roles to the executive authority, the boards, the executives, and also within these entities, you have governance oversight authorities, like internal auditors, your risk managers, and so on. So those roles need to be very clear if you're going to be able to run entities in line with best practice around the world. And there needs to be regular reviewing, obviously, of various instruments that are put in place and updated to ensure that they keep pace with recent learnings. So we are asked to speak to where our entities are. Alexco has remained financially distressed. There has been some restoration of operations at this particular entity. The mine is operational. There has been rationalization of operations so that it is able to meet its obligations. And at the moment, Alesco is able to do that. And the mine as well is able to do that. But we need to, but it's just the sustainability of the business going forward is dependent on certain decisions being made in terms of the end state of the business. Some stability, we must say, has been restored to the business, which is a good thing. And the interim appointments that were made at the mine seems to be doing relatively well. Notwithstanding that, there's still some challenges that we have, and we are hoping soon we'll be able to give a sense of what should be the long-term end state for the entity. We have shared in the past the various options that are available to government on the restructuring of this particular business, and we are hoping that we can arrive at one fairly soon. As the portfolio committee will recall, we had appointed an administrator to help in terms of the restructuring of the business and restoring good governance. Unfortunately, the gentleman left the business, and we have ended up with a situation where the CEO is at Alex, who is filling a couple of roles in the business. That is not an ideal arrangement. We are working on a solution that is tied up, obviously, to the long-term future of the business. For instance, one of the options that we're looking at is whether we should have a smaller interim board to oversee the business going forward. Also to look at between ourselves and other parts of government, what assistance we can get from those quarters to ensure that the business continues to be run properly. The Rutgers Wealth Community structures are very critical to the future of the business. They remain under administration, overseen by the Department of Agriculture, Land Reform and Land Restitution. It's important that as soon normality is restored there, and so that some of the decisions that need to be made regard to the future of the business are done jointly with the community. As everyone will recall, that the land mining rights as well as the land itself is owned by the communities. Government remains with the marine mining rights, though these are pooled currently to ensure a proper functioning of the joint venture. But at some point, we need to make a call as to what should be an ideal arrangement. The arrangement that we have had now from around 2007 should have lasted for 5 years, but it's gone a lot longer than what was intended. And unfortunately, the dysfunctional and the dysfunctionality in the communities have not helped in that regard. So we have been asked to speak a bit on ESCOM, and I think a much better and clearer picture will emerge as ESCOM tables its annual report here at the committee. But what can be said is that the business continues to be beset by what I would call structural issues at the moment, and we have set up an intergovernmental forum that is overseeing the restructuring of the business, what has been termed unbundling. And one of the critical deliverables from government is to ensure that the various legal instruments, regulatory instruments that ensure the functioning of ESCOM are amended to enable a new ESCOM to operate smoothly. And of course, the electricity pricing policy as well as the Energy Regulation Act, those need to be amended accordingly. And that work is being undertaken by DMRE. So we have a target of the end of December this year for the transmission business to operate as a separate legal entity. So so those amendments are critical to us achieving that objective. As we all know that ESCOM is operating in an environment where there has been generally a decline in kilowatt hours, and that the revenues have been supported and driven by the annual tariff increases. That is not obviously a sustainable position that we find ourselves in. The CEO of ESCOM has delivered yesterday an annual farewell address at the Academy of Engineers and share some thoughts in terms of the future of ESCOM. I mean, it's really for everyone worth listening to that. The traditional, I'll call revenue drivers, within ESCOM land with international trends are going to be under pressure going forward. So the business needs to be repositioned to be able to deal with that. The liquidity challenges, mainly driven by the payments from municipalities, of course, alternative sources of electricity now are emerging and they're having a direct impact on the revenue streams of ESCOM, the cost base. A lot of work has been done by ESCOM leadership to drive that down. But that has still means a lot more needs to be done. So there's still a dependence on government to fill the gap, and therefore there's funding support that continues to be given to ESCOM. Access to funding without government guarantee support is a challenge, of course, until the financials of ESCOM are restored. A lot of work has been done in this area between National Treasury and ourselves. The Intergovernmental Forum I referred to earlier has a financial work stream, which is looking at obviously the debt burden on ESCOM, seeing how that could be addressed going forward. Also, the SOE Council has also a financial work stream linked to it, and one of the areas that they're looking at is exactly this. So then with all that brain power that has been developed, a solution should start emerging as soon. Getting to a cost-reflective tariff is one of the solutions that has been put forward. We've always said it should be an efficient cost-reflective tariff. The fact of the matter is you have, as a country, our industrialization was very much informed by fairly cheap electricity due to our endowment of coal, but that has also come at a price, and you have not fully factored in that price. Drive through our coal mining regions in this country where mainly our power stations are located, you can see from the environment in those areas that there's a lot of work that's needed to rehabilitate that, and we're not necessarily fully factored that in. And of course, the health of the people that live in these areas, we all know well about it, and therefore is it a big drive from our colleagues at the environment to enforce, for instance, emissions standards. So those the cost to comply needs to be obviously start reflecting in the consumption of this. Of this service, but of course we need to do that while being cognizant of the fact that we still remain with a large number of our people that are living in poverty. So yeah, so those are the dynamics that we have to deal with. I've spoken about debt levels, illegal connections and cable theft remain a challenge not only to ESCOM but to Transnet as well, to Telcom and to the rest of the private business. There's an area that there are various task teams have been put in place. There's a lot of investment in security that's been put into to address this risk, but more clearly needs to be done. This continues to be a big challenge facing our entities. Aging power plants, the coal-fired power plants, we have referred to that. For instance, Komati, by the end of next year, will not be on our grid. So we need to look at alternative solutions to repurpose those stations. There's a lot of the technology now that is coming through thick and fast, and it's becoming cheaper by the day. So we need to look at how we leverage that to ensure that we deliver energy to our people. The performance of our power stations continues to be an Achilles heel of ESCOM. Of course, the explosion that the chair referred to has not helped with now that unit 4 being lost. And the arrear debts at the municipalities, the city of our municipalities of concern. We have all seen what the Auditor General said about them. So that's an area that we need to look at. There's a strong dependence on our in the municipalities on electricity revenues, and what unfortunately that what that has meant is that some of the revenues that should be going towards ESCOM have been diverted to other needs within municipalities, therefore the huge debt burden that we see. There is a focus on the top 20 indebted municipalities within government that therefore has been led by our deputy president, and we are working very closely with Maluti Apofu, which is the most indebted municipality in the country, to find a solution which hopefully will inform what will be rolled out to the rest of the municipalities. The explosion, Chair, that you have referred to happened on the 8th of August at around 11 o'clock in the evening. When it happened, the unit was on short-term outage for repairs at some of the milling plant components. There was an additional work that was included, repair to a generator, external generator, to a leak. What happened there, and I have colleagues who are much more technically aware of these issues than myself, I can speak to them, but what seemingly happened was that there was an explosion because the hydrogen tank was not fully evacuated, and obviously that's an explosion which led to extensive damage being done to the generator and other components which are in close proximity. At the moment, the full extent of the damage is being determined, and as you can see there, that there's a part of ESCOM that was the task with the responsibility to perform that particular work. And what has been determined is that the procedures in terms of paging the generator were not properly followed. Those that oversaw that operation have been suspended so that a proper investigation can unfold. And those are the individuals that have been identified as about 8 of them all. The Department of Labor's Inspector Commissioner has been on site and is also doing her own investigation. And the recovery, ESCOM has appointed the recovery manager, Rotec, which is part of ESCOM, is also doing some work in order to understand the full extent of the damage cost. And the OEM consent is being involved in this particular aspect. So in relation to Safcol's business is very much linked to the business cycle or to the economic cycle in our country. The solids are consumed mainly by structural industries, that is for the building industry in the manufacturing of roof trusses. There is some of the solids that make it into the mining industry for production of support structures, and of course there's some other industries that consume this, like engineering production of plywood. Now these industries, when the economy struggle, they struggle. We know economies themselves is very much dependent on mining. The good thing is the mining industry, there's good with the commodity prices being where it is, it's things are looking a little bit better there. So, but the result of that is that Safcol overall is struggling to break through 1 billion rand revenue the threshold. So we need if 200,000 hectares of land, we believe that they should be performing above that particular number. But that is dependent on Safcol being able to add value to its solar product. It must get to a point where a certain percentage of the solar is processed internally, and the figures are sitting around 20% previously. We need to arrive at a figure which is sustainable, does not threaten the small sawmills in their core areas of operations in Mpumalanga and in Limpopo. There is a couple of projects that have been identified to enable that. There is, for instance, the sawmill up in Venda is being refurbished to improve its productivity and reliability. And there's a need for a processing plant in the low fault of Mpumalanga. So those projects will enable the revenue numbers to start looking proper going forward. There has, of course, been some delays related to the lockdown. Some of the resources that are required to be able to upgrade Timbadala, which is the sawmill, which is in Venda, were not able to travel to the country. So that has meant that project has had to be delayed for quite some time. Genel Chair remains financially strained. We are developing a solution in relation to that, and we have to report that National Treasury has is meeting the obligations, the current government guaranteed obligations on Genel, but we need to implement a new business model for Genel that requires money. We need to ensure that Genel is structured, it's a much leaner and better performing business going forward, that we are able to, of course, retain some of the talent that is critical to Genel's performance going forward. So that is the work that we are currently doing internally. We hope the plan will, in terms of the funding of the restructuring, will be approved from government soon. But it's imminent. We have a joint team that is led at the DG level by myself, which includes the DOD and National Treasury, which is working on that plan. And we should be able to soon get an okay from our principals to ensure to enable Genel to implement that. The new operating model that Genel has put in place is reflected there. And the board and the minister have given this an okay. It means there are certain businesses of Genel, depending on how the intergovernmental forum agrees, that should be exited. But we have already identified, for instance, that the space business, we are having discussions with DSI that it gets transferred to DSI, because the capabilities that we have, including at Haltech, are very critical to the, for instance, to the SKA project. Mechem is to be a pioneer in the demining space. The reality these days is other countries have developed that capability, and the market that it used to have it no longer has. So that has put a lot of pressure on that business. We have the gear ratio, which is a critical business, I must add, in terms of provision of mechanical powertrain components, more specifically for DOD vehicles. But it's a business as well that also provides similar components, and the large portion of this business is the private sector. Genel has identified as one of the businesses that should be exited. And of course, that will depend on our discussions in the Department of Defense. There is, we need to consolidate the property portfolio. As the NAL gets smaller, it needs to also reduce its footprint accordingly. We believe that there are also opportunities in working much closer with the Department of Defense. There are technical support workshops, for instance, in the Army space that we need to work closely with going forward. There's really no case to have both that the capability is duplicated in the NAL and the GOG. So we believe that through a proper arrangement, we can ensure that we reduce the costs associated by reducing that duplication. And we have the air service units in the South African Air Force and a similar capability in the NAL aeronautics. So we need to look at how do we consolidate that particular capability. The NAL has identified what will be three product streams. The land systems. This is really the core of the business going forward. Land systems, vehicle systems, dynamics, as well as integrated system solutions, which is where the ground-based air defense system has been deployed and supported from. And what the NAL has identified is that it needs to consolidate its succession development capabilities so that it can get the best value out of them, because there's a huge under-recovered cost linked to, if you have 1,600 hours, for instance, of an engineer, you're only utilizing them for 300 hours a year. It means there's about 1,300 hours that you're not able to recover. But if that's very same engineer, for instance, if you have a logistics engineer, they can work on land systems, they can work on airborne systems, you start to recover better and you don't have to carry that many engineers in the system. So that's some of the innovation that DINAL is working on. What DINAL has also said is that the second leg of his business, the maintenance and manufacturing, they want to bring that a lot closer to each other. The same, because of course, once you've manufactured the system, it needs to be supported out there. So if you are able to use the same facilities and people to maintain system going forward, you have better synergies. But importantly, Chair, we also need to look at how from the rest of government, the business of DINAL can be supported. For instance, when it comes to munitions, all our security services are purchasing from DINAL? Because the answer is no. So what kind of products are being brought into the country that could be supplied by DINAL? We need to have a look at that. So that, because what we know for sure, and this has been confirmed in our engagements with our counterparts at the Department of Defense, is that DINAL continues to be a very critical component of their operational capabilities. DINAL has also looked at how it could also leverage, for instance, its IP register and in terms of providing similar services, obviously to non-commercial and non-defense businesses, my apology, but also it's a asset. What are the new capabilities that we should be developing to provide new services to the country? For instance, the recent challenges that we've had in the logistics part of our businesses, including the disruption of operations, are saying that DINAL can play a critical role going forward. DINAL, in this respect, has said we need to address the cost base of the business, as I said, IP, they said research and development, they said this business process needs to be streamlined, said there's non-military business required, they need to also partner smartly going forward, because the reality of it is that no one organization in this era of complexity can can survive on its own. It needs to have those partnerships so that it can leverage capabilities of others. We come to SAA, Chair, we are really at the tail end of the restructuring and of the business. Of course, the business rescue plan was agreed in July, August last year. It's been implemented. We have a much smaller business these days. We have announced a preferred SEP. So what needs to be done now is that we need to conclude the sale and purchase agreement with that SEP, so that the business ideally return to operations, as well as completion of the sale should coincide. But the team at SAA, the leadership team we have there, is working on the resumption of operations plan. They have also been communicating quite strongly in the public arena, so their plans are well known. There are aircraft that they have leased in order to operate both domestic as well as regional operations. They're also in a position to be able to resume international operations depending on the various destinations open up as the pandemic wanes, we hope. Their operations certificate has been renewed, so they went successfully through an audit by the South African Civil Aviation Authority, and retraining of the cabin crew and pilots is unfolding. And we have, of course, an interim board of management that is leading the organization. We have a change in the leadership of the chairperson as the last chairperson committed to be with us for a period of about 6 months. We have Dr. John Lamola, who is now leading the SAA board. He's a well-known leader in the aviation as well as in the academic fields. The due diligence on is very much well advanced. We are at the tail end of that. And of course, there's a direct relationship between the due diligence as well as the SPA, because you need to agree as to how the risks that are inside by the due diligence will be managed in the shoulder agreement going forward. And of course, once the SPA is completed, it will signal the cessation of government control on the business. The government will continue to be a significant minority shareholder in the business. And of course, we intend to play a constructive role in terms of ensuring that SAA is restored as a leading airline on the continent again. The state of the subsidiary, Chair Mango, has been in the news of recent. It is in business rescue from the 28th of July. It is, as we know, the unions had opted to go to court to enforce business rescue while we're in the midst not only agreeing on a plan for the business rescue, but also ensuring that there's funding to support the potential that there is post-commission funding for the business. We made our case through SAA at the court, and the court agreed with the leadership of SAA and ourselves to say that the business will be put in the business rescue in a process that is overseen by the board. And as a result, we have had a business rescue practitioner appointed, Mr. Sikosono, of the service advisory. And the brief is that this process should be concluded speedily within 3 months. And of course, the process will also inform the long-term future of the airline. It is our hope that the business will not be lost from our skies, but what we are dealing with is a major challenge here, what is about 2.5 billion rands of of liabilities that have been generated in the business. So there is South African Airways Technical is going through a Section 189. It is being restructured to ensure that it can live within its means. The business of visas from SAA will be reducing from 40 odd aircraft, about 45 aircraft that were operated there. And in the beginning, there'll be less than five aircraft that will stabilize in the short term, below 10. So that gives you a sense of how small the business from SAA will be. Of course, continue to have third party work that it performs. But most important is that it must do that all that work profitably, but there needs to also be proper processes put in place there. The issue of mismanagement and corruption must be addressed. So we do intend in the short term to ensure that we have a proper team leading that particular business, because it has an opportunity to be a mainstay of operations at Johannesburg, which is one of the major aviation cities in the world. SAA Tinkal has really, due to some of the shenanigans that were shared, that the Zondo Commission, for instance, has really let everyone else down badly. So, but we'll be correcting that. So we have released funds from the department to ensure that the several packages to us as the organization are made available to the team, and also to ensure that some of the outstanding salaries are settled. As I said, this will be a smaller business than in the past, but it will be a strong business, which should be able to support growth going forward. Air chefs, the restructuring there is slightly behind to that at SAT, but it must come in soon. It is an essential business in the aviation space. In-flight catering is an essential offering of full service carriers. So, and of course, those that are international carriers that fly in the country, it makes a lot more business sense if they are supported from the destination. So that's what we're hoping the role that it will play going forward. Southern Asia, of course, the decision on whether they are part of the new business going forward, with the new shareholder, will still needs to be made. But we believe that there is a strong prospect that they will continue to be part of the new business going forward. We have released funds as well to ensure that we settle our spending salaries at air chefs. And that was important to air chefs, because you know, the large component of air chefs employees are women, black women from working class communities. So that support was very important for us to ensure that it's rolled out. SAA Express, as we noticed, it has been in a provisional liquidation, and that liquidation was extended only in 8th of July. The potential buyer has submitted a revised offer. It looked like the previous preferred a buyer could not come to the party in terms of the price that they had offered. So that process in the hands of the liquidator. We have Mumsa and Saka that have gone to the Constitutional Court to challenge the liquidation of Express. They are making case that Parliament should have been involved in the process. On our side, as DPE, will be responding to the application. Chair, Transnet, as we know, they've had some turbulences in their own space in recent times, especially the Durban to Johannesburg corridor has been very much affected. But we must say that the response by business partners, and especially in the private sector, providing the support to the Transnet to restore logistic operations, as well as to respond to the recent attack on its IT systems, has been great, and it's shown that working together across various sectors, both public and private entities, a lot more can be achieved. And we hope that that is what will inform how we do things in the future, especially with the need to expand capacity on various business lines of Transnet. The pandemic has been quite hard on the business. You know, in the beginning, the lockdown had to relax some of its some of the requirements on Transnet to enable essential goods to be able to flow. Since there have been some lessons from that, so things even during these latest lockdowns have been going a lot smoother than before. There is volumes and revenues gradually growing since the pandemic. We'll speak a little bit about the corporatization in this presentation. The new leadership, we see that it's having an impact on liquidity in the business is improving, but I think we'll get a much better picture when the results of Transnet are tabled before the committee. The corporatization of Transnet is one of the announcements that were made recently. Both the minister and the president oversaw that project at Cape Town Port. This is a process that started way back in 1996. It's gone a lot slower than what it should have. There was a white paper in 1996 that called for establishment of the National Ports Authority. The act which I'll speak to now enabled establishment of a ports regulator, which was done, the separation of the functions of the port authority and port operations, which has been done, but now obviously we're looking to take it to the next step in terms of ensuring independence between these various business operations. Of course, ensuring that we have a competitive service offering that supports the economy and it's providing the right capacity at the right time. And, you know, in recent times, we have had our challenges, especially with availability of running stock, and ensure that there's a wider choice of shippers, or rather of for the shippers of port services. The guiding principles that would inform this new dispensation was that the independence of the Transnet National Port Authority, and that as you know, the Minister of Public Enterprises has supported and authorized, and that this new authority will be the landlord of all ports, which by their nature these are strategic public assets. Ensuring that we are able to crowd in the private sector into the development as well as the operations in these spaces, so that we are able to provide adequate capacity to ensure that this economy grows and breaks away from the low growth trajectory that we have been on since 2009, and ensure that there is a competitive process in availing and concessions and leases within the ports, and importantly that all these processes are transparent and there are clear objectives that are informing them, and the operators that are chosen, for instance, there are no doubts in anyone's mind that the proper processes have been followed. This is the act that has, so that should have been 2005, not 2015. Apologies for that. Section 2 of the act was very clear to say once the act was passed that the minister, in this case, Minister of Public Enterprises, must ensure that the National Port Authority of Salga is established. And that the register of companies also act accordingly to ensure this is registered. And then it provides the Minister of Public Enterprise that at a particular stage, they may take necessary steps to convert the company to a public company, which is obviously will have the authority to own, manage, control, administer parts within the Republic of South Africa. The corporatization chair itself was informed by proper studies, impact studies done by the department to ensure that we bring all government stakeholders on board and also to understand what the decision would mean for the financials of Transnet. How do we deal with the liabilities? For instance, how do we deal with cash flows going forward? We had the Operation Kulindlela, which has been established in the National Treasury, and that is driving structural reforms across government, play a critical role in the work that needs to be done. The Minister of Public Enterprises had given adequate notice of what will be coming in 2020 budget vote. He had indicated that the intention to have a TNPA corporatized, and of course, the announcement that I referred to earlier happened on the 22nd of June 2021, was established TNPA as a subsidiary of Transnet with the board of this entity supporting the Transnet board. And this ambassador is Section 3 of the Act we just looked at just now. And ensuring that in the interim we have a board that can be governing, and that appointment has been made. We have Mr. Famadi chairing that board, and we have Louis van Zelma as well as Dimakatso Matsoha as the rest of the non-executive board members on the interim board. And we had the Minister of Transport very much involved in this particular process, and we have got formal confirmation from him that the announcement and the decisions associated were in line with the National Ports Act, and also on our side, we ensured that proper care is taken to ensure that this decision is consistent with the prescriptions of the Companies Act. We have just attached there, I think that's the World Bank report that Team Mother put up, was right at the bottom. But of course, as we have come to know now, is that the World Bank study was done. There was not a proper methodology attached to that, and that was confirmed by local business. But I think if anything, that report is saying there's a lot of work that needs to be done to ensure that our ports are supportive to the local economy. Chair, we have the interim board. The full-time board, the process to appoint that are unfolding. There is an MOI that has been developed, and this entity, as we said, will be operating independent, is an independent subsidiary of Transnet, and the government thereof was on the 9th of July 2021. The project plan that informs of the right that needs to be done is being overseen by the department. And that there's consultations internally within Transnet with Labour, and also before the announcement of the 22nd of there was an engagement with the leading unions within Transnet, Unity and SADAW. So that brings me to the end of my presentation. Thank you very much, and my apologies, I may have gone longer than planned.
Thank you, Dutri, for your comprehensive report. And I hope members have captured all the issues they would like to engage on. I just want to check if there is anyone first from the ministry who would like to take from where you live, just to put issues into context.
I'm just checking through the list if none of the ministers, deputy or minister is around, seemingly none of them. And is anyone talking?
I was confirming that, Chair, to say there's the leadership in the ministry, unfortunately, is not available.
Okay. No, thanks. Normally, they joined us in the middle of the discussion when they were involved in some cabinets. I was checking if the cabinet didn't finish earlier and then they come. Okay, it's fine. Let us take the members' inputs on the report. And I would like to start with the Honorable Mkhwanazi.
Thanks, Chair. I hope I'm audible.
You are loud and clear.
Thanks, Chairperson. Greetings to you, the Chairperson, honorable members, my colleagues, the colleagues from the Department of Public Enterprise led by the DG, the Ministry, and everyone in the meeting. Chairperson, I think we must first note the progress done by the DPE, led by the DG. I'm just hoping, Chair, that the stability that is we've been complaining about in the DPE, that of the permanent appointments, is now bearing fruit, and they can work on that potential and that and that advantage to stabilize the department going forward. Chair, the DG talked about their internal audit. Maybe if we can just paint a summary picture to say what is it that is it promising? Is there any potential going forward from the internal audit? I understand that we will get the report in due course, but from the internal audit, if we can paint a summary picture. Chairperson and governance, I'm happy about the issue of, before that, before the SOE bill, Chair, on governance, the issue, I'm just checking whether the issue of vetting of board members and the executive that we've been raising in the meeting, is it included in the risk and integrity framework? If it's not, can we find the space and we find the reasons why? Because we've been raising that as this portfolio committee, the issue of vetting of members of board members and their executive. Thirdly, Chair, from me is the SOE bill. I'm happy, DJ, that you said it yourself that this is one of our major deliverables as the department and then this portfolio committee. But Chair, without being without being made not sure about it, but if we can get from time to time, if we can get the progress to ensure that indeed it will get its finalization by the end of 2021, 2022, as it is in the report, because I think from the beginning of our term, we've been talking about the same issue. Chair, I wanted to talk to the resolution. As much as I cannot remember the exact date, but there is a resolution of a portfolio committee. The deputy minister was in the meeting to say, let us get the progress report, especially on the consequence management and the report by the SIU pertaining the department. Maybe that report will give us an ease and will give us and some answers on many questions that we may have going forward. I don't know where that can be taken and be implemented going forward, because it is the resolution of this portfolio committee. Chair, on the issue of ESCOM, we will await the consequence management on the report of Medupi. Let us hope it will be soon. And lastly, Chair, from me, if the DG can talk to the load shedding and the load reduction, because I think those two things are really troubling our end users and our communities out there. And what is the plan going forward from ESCOM? If we don't get the answer, I think a part of the report of ESCOM, the DPE must make sure that ESCOM talk largely on those two issues. Chairperson, thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Mkhwanazi. Followed by Honorable Katalia.
Thank you, Chair. Chair, thank you for the presentation through you. It deals with the seven key SOEs that impact, in no uncertain terms, the future of South Africa Incorporated in terms of its economy, with revenues running into hundreds of billions of rands. As such, it is terribly important. And frankly, I think, you know, that we have 3 hours allocated from 10 to 1 o'clock to deal with this plethora of issues after one hour plus of presentation, leaving under 2 hours of engagement does not do justice to the importance of this particular committee and its deliberations in terms of how it impacts our country, and it impacts our country in no uncertain terms. I would implore you, Chair, to consider how we can meet more often and for longer in these trying times to deal with what is necessary for our country. But having said that, let me address a couple of issues first at high level, and then specifically in terms of the entities raised. In terms of the high level comments, there was mention made of the ownership model, i.e. centralized, hybrid, or decentralized, and then a comment that was made by the DG that the trend was towards worldwide centralized models. I would like him to provide us, and if he can't do it now, he can do it later, but I would like to see it, examples of who has been moving to centralized models under what circumstances, and who has been moving away from centralized models under what circumstances. This will inform us in our particular circumstances. Secondly, it is clear to me, or it should be clear to everybody, that the rationale for SOEs, for the state to step in, is because of market failure. And I'm pleased to see through the presentation here that there is a recognition of market failure in terms of the state, in terms of its attempt to deal with the market failure in the first instance by instituting state and operating state-owned enterprises, by its move towards corporatization and privatization. Now, in terms of this, we need a proper detailing, not just generic comment, of how this is going to be achieved, how it's going to be funded, who are going to be the investors, under what circumstances, what are the rights and the terms of reference associated to that, who is going to finance it, what government levers will be retained and why. These are very important issues, and I hope that note will be taken and will be provided with answers. As I say, not necessarily now, but if they are not provided now at high level, they must be please provided in writing. We also need an understanding of the risks and integrity framework, which is referred to, and have sight of that, and very importantly, of the consequence management in terms of that. There's been mention made of the integration of the lessons from Zondo and other commissions. Well, let's have a tabulation of exactly what we've learned and what we're going to do to obviate that from happening again, because we cannot carry on like this. We will end up in considerable disaster. Now, with specific reference to the entities, let's look at Alex Corp. You know, it says Alex Corp is able to meet its immediate obligations. I think that is a statement which bends the truth somewhat. It cannot meet its obligations. It's essentially bankrupt and run appallingly. I'd like to understand the status and standing of the PSJV in terms of how it's governed and not governed under current circumstances by the PFMA. For a state organization, for a state-owned organization, this is absolutely crucial, and I would like answers on it. Secondly, there's the issue of the monies and the obligations owed to the community. I'd like to, this has been going on forever. We're told it's the Richtersveld communities under administration. We want to have real time frames of when this is going to be addressed and when they are going to receive, what they are going to receive, and what they are owed, and who is going to get what. Then there's the question of diamond sales. There was a sight of a particular list over a number of years, going right up to the end of 2019, of diamond sales that were the prices that were achieved. They were achieved at considerable variance from the norm, and which is only indicative of malfeasance. And that actually predates the current CEO, but also goes into sales under his jurisdiction and aegis. Those need to be accounted for, because that is a very serious issue. Then there is the question of the allied question of the non-payment of to certain entities for information management systems, which are cited now as they're not being able to have access to, and we need to understand why they haven't paid these people to give us the information, and that is why we're lacking the information to come to conclusions about potential governance and malfeasance in that regard. Let us also deal with the governance that was referred to of the CEO currently fulfilling, as it said, a couple of roles. This flies in the face of governance. It has to be stopped immediately, and we need to understand what is being done right now to fix that governance, not tomorrow, today. Eskom, in terms of Medupi, which, as we know, was greeted with much fanfare, only 3 days later to be met with an explosion which put that to bed. Let's understand the timeline to fix, the cost to fix, from where that money will come. Those are very important things which need to be addressed, particularly given the declining volumes and the planned reductions of our coal fleet, which has been announced. Then there's the question of maintenance, the installation of scrubbers and flue gas desulfurization. That needs to be addressed, because that is absolutely crucial, and we need to know exactly when that is being done, how it is being done, what it costs, and who is going to pay for it. Allied to that, while all this is happening, is the fact that diesel is being burnt at the rate of knots. We need to understand that in the previous year, 3.2 billion rands of diesel was burnt against a budget of 789 million rands. Now, what is the ongoing usage, and what is the cost going forward, and what is the implication of this on tariffs to the ordinary user and business users? These are questions which must be answered, and must be answered transparently and in detail. We need to know, and the country needs to know. Then there's the question of what happened at Medupi. Well, let us await that report and get a complete insight into what happened there, and how the reliability maintenance, which was touted for a long time, resulted in this particular exposure, which is going to cost many billions to fix. So Then there was mention made of the OEM involvement. Well, we'd like to know what that involvement is, who the OEM is, and at what cost, and whether insurance will cover it, whether, and if not, why not? On the question of Donnell, we're talking about certain privatizations and partnerships here, which is welcome. I'd like to understand details of Rheinmetall's investment and their investment that was previously mooted, which was not taken up, and why. There's a question of staff and engineering deficits, which need to be addressed. The loss of contracts need to be addressed, and the all-important issue of funding. We need information on this. When we get to SAA, let's understand when the date of resumption is going to be. What is the funding, where is the funding coming from to these investors? In terms of sources, what is the we need transparency about the ultimate sources of the funding, or whether that will come through various government agencies or independently. We want answers on that. And we want to understand, in terms of where the funding comes from and who it comes from, what potential conflicts there were. There may be, because there are conflicts which have been raised, particularly with elements of the consortium. Then on the question of subsidiaries of SAA, we need to understand the business rescue and what the plans are. In terms of Mango, and well, in terms of, let's start with technical and air chefs. We need to understand, for example, when Mango goes through its business process and hopefully gets resuscitated, will they be required to source from air chefs and technical services, or will they have the degrees of freedom in terms of a competitive playing field to source goods and services independently? Otherwise, just another layer of added costs will be added on to a supposedly restructured airline, which will, in a very in an industry which relies on margins, which will have no hope of succeeding. The same applies to SAA. And when is Parliament going to debate the issue as has been requested by the unions? That's terribly important. Now let's get to Transnet. The corporatization of Transnet is to be welcome, and we need to understand exactly what the terms of these investments will be and what they are envisaged to be. Is it along the lines of the corporatization and so-called privatization that was taken, that happened in Telkom, or is there another model here envisaged? In terms of the investments by shareholders, we need to understand, in terms of the investment and the retention of certain portions of investment by the shareholder, what degrees of freedom does that give the shareholder to continue with CADA deployment and the layers of cost that affect competitiveness and cost? That is absolutely crucial and will impact the terms of investment and the nature of the investment and whether people will come on board. Then the issue of the cyber attack which happened, and the issue of rail security, which are allied. We'd like to understand what the risk management going forward in no uncertain terms has been put in place. The potential investors are a host of international and local investors. They could be Maersk, Hutchinson, Costco, Grindrod, Bidvest, Dubai Ports. They would want to know, and I would want to know, what would they be getting for their investment? What will they do? What will the shareholder retain? What will they get for their in terms of the leases, concessions, and in terms of their investment, and how this will be comply with the Companies Act. I leave it there for now, but these are important questions which I expect answers on each one. Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Kashalia. It's now Honorable Maud.
Thank you very much, Chair, and greetings to the colleagues. So I'm going to go straight into the entities. When you look at Alexco, The presentation says that the PSJV restructuring options are being developed, but this process has been ongoing for some time now. Can the DG tell us how long will it still take for this process to be concluded? Because we've been talking about it over a long time. And then he also says there's a long-term decision on this particular entity that is being considered. What is that decision? Are we also planning to privatize this entity? Because seemingly, it's like it's a new normal that all the SOEs are going to be privatized. So what should we anticipate with this decision that is pending? When you look at Eskom, DG, you've listed virtually most of the challenges except the one of the load shedding, which should have been top of the list, unless if you believe that load shedding or what you now call load reduction is no longer a problem, and you can assure the nation that we will not have challenges of load shedding / load reduction anymore. So we need that assurance from you because it's not in your list. So is it something of yesterday that we can forget about it? But even on the challenges that you've highlighted, you're not saying anything about how the department is assisting this entity to overcome all the challenges. I mean, cable theft, declining sales volumes, we know those things. But what are we doing as the department to assist this entity, which in the main, if you look at all the challenges, are actually relating to the incompetence of the current leadership led by the CEO of Eskom? And you're not saying anything about it. What are you doing? What are you doing about the incompetence of this leadership of Eskom today? And then going on to Medupi, I know that the investigations are still on, but when do you anticipate that you'll have the full report of this explosion? And in the interim, I'm sure the Eskom team would have done some analysis of the indicative loss of revenue due to this explosion and how much more will be required to put it back into full operation. There should be preliminary estimates that are there. And also, how long will it take for them to restore this be back into full operation? Moving on to Dinel, what's the department doing about employees who remain unpaid since June? And you've highlighted there that Treasury, National Treasury is assisting there with some resources there. So the question is, what measures do you have in place as a department to ensure that this entity honors its obligations to National Treasury? And you being the shareholder, what revenue-generating projects do you have or does the DINEL have that will assist this entity to generate its own revenue and to be able to sustain itself? Going into SAA, we now know that 51% is owned by private hands, private shareholding. Now, the question is, what are these private shareholders bringing on the table? How much money have they put in into this entity? And now overlapping to the subsidiaries of SAA, why is it a surprise that the subsidiaries of SAA are now not performing? I mean, we should have known long time ago what will be the impact of privatizing SAA on each subsidiary. So we can't be told today that Mango is undergoing business rescue. Why have you not seen that? Why have you not anticipated that that will be the case? And why have you not put measures in place to try to address those challenges? And that goes also for SAAT. Now, the last one is Transnet. Well, we do know, and it's become very clear that Transnet is also following suit in terms of privatization. You started with the ports, you are coming for TFR. I mean, not very long ago, you were almost selling the assets of TFR. So it's become an open secret that Transnet is also on the verge of being privatized. So the cyber attacks, what is the impact of the cyber attacks both operationally and financially on Transnet? Thank you, Chair. That will be all from my side.
Thank you. Thank you, Honorable Mawata. You will be followed by Honorable Dlamini. Honorable Dlamini, are you there? Okay. Seemingly, we don't have Honorable Dlamini. I thought we do have. Honorable Dlamini? Okay. Go to Honorable Kwankwa.
Apologies, Chair. He has apologized.
Oh, okay. Honorable Kwankwa?
He also apologized, Chair.
Okay. Honorable Clark.
Good morning, Chairperson. Good morning to everybody, and thank you for the presentation. I'm not going to ask the same questions that the previous members have asked, but there are a couple of things that I would like to factor in as well. And the one is, we please, as a committee, receive the outcome report of the commission that was appointed in terms of state-owned entities. It would be good to see what their findings were and that report is shared with the committee. I also would like to know how do we envisage getting competent people on board in terms of executives, in terms of the board and high-level senior staff in order to ensure that SOEs are functional, considering that, we have been in this band of cadre deployment, and we all know that in very many instances, the failures of government is related to that. I will start with Alex Kaur, and Member Kachale has covered a lot of the issues that I would wanted to raise, but there are a couple of things that I would also like to ask. Is I am informed that Brigadier Jaap Burger has done an investigation around the criminal activities within Alex Kaur, and we would very much like that report to come to the committee and present it to us, as well as the SCOPA report, so that we can see what the status quo is of Alex Kaur in terms of fraud and corruption and maladministration that's going on within the division. I also would like to know whether the likes of Mervyn Carstens and Daniel Nathan, Reagan Phillips, these people that were involved previously, are they being awarded contracts to Alex Kaur currently? If we could get the answers to that. And then also, what is the situation and the status quo of the Richtersveld and the commission that was appointed in order to resolve the issues around that? We would like to see an update of that as well. And Chairperson, I must just state that, this is a really long presentation. There's a lot of deliberation that needs to be done around this presentation in terms of the committee and our mandate to do proper oversight. And I honestly don't think that this meeting adds justice to what is expected of us as a committee. We would need at least a two-day session to sit down and really analyze this, have the departments come and present to us, so that we are 100% on board with what is going to happen going forward. In terms of Eskom, obviously also a full report in terms of the explosion. And I'm sure if we look, once we receive that report, we can then analyse and see what's really happened in terms of that unit, because I'm almost sure you will find an element of fraud and corruption that went on and that unit wasn't to the standard it should have been required to. Also, a report as to how they're going to be dealing with load shedding and load reduction. And also, how is Eskom actually going to address illegal connections? Because illegal connections, nothing much has been done about that for a very long time. And I mean, you just see even in local authorities that they are not able to supply the kind of electricity they should because the grid is so overburdened and has huge impact on supply. Then in terms of SASCOL, if we also could get a report on the status quo of the land claims on at SASCOL, that would be very helpful as well. Then we go to Denel. Yes, Chairperson, I think, you know, Denel is critical for this country and in a terrible status quo at the moment in terms of finances. And I mean, one wants to ask whether Denel still has the capability in order to produce missiles and to continue with the very important work they should do, because they've had a huge exit in terms of their skills. I mean, could they confirm? I mean, that PMP is not even tax compliant at the moment, and if PMP is not tax compliant, then SAPS, South African Defence Force, and the likes can't even purchase put in any purchases in terms of what they need and require. sorry, I just want to go to the next. And in terms of Mango, Chair, as we know, Mango has now applied for business rescue. And originally the court did not accept that application and said it was 3 months too late. Now, according to reports, Mango has been writing to the DPE pleading with them to put them under business rescue. And this was about a year ago. And apparently, if we had done that, Mango would have been in a much better financial situation at this stage. And why was that request never taken into consideration and taken as an urgent matter? In terms of SA Technical being status quo, would SAA truthfully say that it's able to comply to the regulatory and safety compliances? If you could also just let us know what the status quo is of the pilots, and also when will the airlines restart plan? When will they start? When are they going to start flying again? Will a new fleet be bought or leased, and how large would the fleet be? And will South Africa, could you also tell us what, have they come to an agreement what routes South African Airways would be flying? That's me for now. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, Honorable Clark. And I will go to Honorable Komani. Seemingly, we don't have Honorable Komani. I was just going through the present people, and I didn't see Honorable Buthelezi. Is Honorable Buthelezi present? He is also not present. Honorable Malinga. She is also not present here. Honorable Kumede,
Chair.
Thank you, Honorable Kumede.
Thank you very much, Chair, and greetings to all members present to the meeting. Chair, I'll just proclaim myself and say I would like to give a summary, in fact, because issues and matters raised by all members that have spoken are issues and matters that all of us, we do have an interest in them. Firstly, Chair, it may be appropriate to say to the DG or the department, thank you very much for the presentation. There is one thing I learn when the presentation is done. When members begin to unpack matters that you would have raised, as well as ask clarities on matters or issues that you would have tabulated. In fact, no one saying the report is not giving what has been or is expected of them. You must understand that that report has in fact won the interest of members. So this is my observation, and this is what I have seen. Secondly, Chair, is based on that, it's true that the report is long. Being long is true as well, that we have not given ourselves justice, that we have enough time to discuss matters. However, with the side of the department, there is only one thing now that they need to do. We need to have a very proper time frame. When are some of these things happening? At least if, even if it may not be the accurate date, but it helps us as a committee to make sure that this is what we are expecting on this date, as well as the department will be on its toes trying to meet that kind of a deadline. So what will be left for the committee then will be to have a very good structured oversight, because all of us would know that these are the things that are coming. I want to recommend, Chair, to the department that can we take this report as the report that perhaps after a month we are given a progress report on this report. This is not what we do. In many instances, the department will come and present. We ask questions. And then the following meeting, which in fact has no time frame, will come and would have forgotten about some of the matters and issues we would have raised in order to shape the whether the department or perhaps the SOEs. Chair, let me say, you know, on DINEL, because this is serious, on DINEL, all what one may be waiting for, this meeting is critical. Somewhere the DG spoke about a joint ministerial meeting. Again, it has no date. And the life of DINEL, all of us, we can see that it's really going down. And all of us, we agree. DINEL, it's an entity, as much as all entities are important. But it is so important because it talks about the security of the country. If then we can't do that, then it will be a challenge to us. There are a few things that we need to sort of confirm. All of us who are asking these things, but there is no answer that is coming up. The issue of finance funding, that where is the money going to come from? The department, one stage, it needs to be bold. Yes, it's good. We have seen that very soon, pretty soon, as much as we are not given the date by SAA, very soon the SAA will be taking off. How then do we sustain and manage SAA, right? It will be the same thing as well, again, looking for an equity partner with DINEL. It will be kind of the same thing. What is unfortunate, Paris, is a different strategy where we engage. We need to get exactly what can Treasury offer to us in order to maintain, sustain these SOEs, because we can't live without them. Chair, let me say, as much as these will be some of the questions that are very much open-ended, let's all agree that the SOEs are weak. We need to ask ourselves a very pertinent question. What is causing all these SOEs to be weak? If we had enough time, those are the things we need to sit down and talk about them and have a very good exchange, right? Can we convince ourselves as this collective, both the DPE, all members, that the SOEs will in fact ever come back? Are we looking forward to that? We need to identify the weaknesses and say, this is not going to happen, this can happen, but if we are not honest to ourselves, we'll keep on saying things that in fact some of them may be far-fetched. And I accept, and you know, the question that we are privatizing, I don't think we are, but the only option we may have if we say we look for money, the first option, I think there are two options. The first option is government, that is the treasury. The second one, the only option we have is the equity partner. Yes, it's the same kind of a privatization, but it's not a complete privatization. So all what we do, once we gain muscle, we may have the right perhaps to come back and do all these things. You know, unfortunate for DNL, in a sense that they are trying things that may not be that much accurate or could be really implemented. It's not the first time we talk about the sale of non-core assets. Some of these assets are really obsolete, and there is no much interest from the market that some of these things are bought. You remember the last report where we were saying, I know that currently we are aiming that within 5 years, that's what you are saying, within 5 years we may get 1.5 billion in terms of dispatching of those non-core. And you are expecting that perhaps that little bit of amount may help DNL then to catch up with the situation. Perhaps the third question, Chair, out of this, I'm not expecting perhaps the DG to answer to them, because these are very sort of packed kind of questions. Is what do we need to do to save all these entities? Because we need them, and they are very, very much kind of critical in our lives and in our economy, and to the government as well. And if I may say, Chair, what kind of support that the department may require from us as MPs? I think, Chair, doing oversight, for me, only oversight is not enough. There is something plus that we need to do in order for us to be hands-on and be convinced that we are assisting the department. Okay, many of us, if we may recall, ever since we came here, we've been talking about restructuring, especially talking the restructuring of boards and whatever, right? But the serious factor is, as much as we restructure, it is so important for us as members. We, at one stage, a decision that we want to, still I can't remember whether from China or India, where board members are hired 3 months before they take office, so that we ensure that these board members are trained and we are satisfied that they do have skills, let alone the qualification. People may have the real qualification, but in terms of either the experience and the practicality in terms of the work, those are all things that we want. Those are the things we agreed and we accepted, that we need to see that all board members are in fact equipped, are trained, so that they know. If our management are not the right management in terms of administration, we won't get anywhere. Decisions that we take, we expect that those decisions be implemented. Because if they don't get implemented, we will find that SOEs will always be languishing in a situation like this. You expect that people will do the work and it can't happen. I'm hoping, most unfortunately, we are saying that we can't, perhaps this time around, we can't discuss finances because the reports, the audit reports have kind of been delayed. And these things are serious, Jay. Very serious. I'm hoping the department will in fact come back to us that we take, I'm making a recommendation, Chair. We take this report after a month or so. It depends whether 2 months. We want to get the progress report from the reports they've been given. We can't deviate from the things we would have raised and then start talking other things that in fact are not in line with matters and issues that would have been raised. So, Chair, for me, I'm saying today is a little bit of a milestone. Things that the department has raised, they've won interest for many of us, but members are saying, give us more. And we're saying on our time, give us more time. And we're saying, let's strengthen our oversight and be sure. At least we leave a mark that when the other members come in the new term, at least they've got something to look at. Thank you very much, Chair. I'm sorry to proclaim myself as the summarizer.
Thank you. Thank you, Honorable Gumed. DG, I think I will be giving over to your team, to yourself and your team, to start responding. But I would like also just to ask one lousy question. I'm covered with questions that have been reflected here by the members. But I just want to check. Because we are a developmental state and we do have what we refer to as corporate government. But there is something that disturbs me, particularly in relation to the airport entity, which is not necessarily under us as a Department of Public Enterprise, but it's a state-owned entity. Now, there is this kind of just decide to ground a state-owned airline for reasons that I think are not very, very, very strong or necessarily are not beyond engagement by state-owned entities, because both Mango, for example, recently, and the airport entity are more of both state-owned. I don't understand why is it difficult to engage between the two
entities before such kind of a drastic decision is taken. I was listening when it was explained as to why Mango was grounded. And when I listened to that didn't warrant such kind of aid, specifically from a state-owned entity, grounding and understanding the circumstances that were confronted, are still confronted by Mango Airline, you know. And which is not only applicable to Mango, but to all the aviation industry currently, due to also the contribution of the COVID-19 problems. I just wanted to check, how do you engage each other as the state-owned entities? Also, I would like honorable members to just caution, because there has been a complaint that has come when you're making your contribution. You're consistently raising the issue of time. While I am giving each member to speak long as he or she can, you know, to shoot all issues at his or her mind to the department, even beyond the parameters of the meeting. The purpose of this meeting particularly was to engage the Department of Public Enterprise at a policy level. We're still going to meet all the affected state-owned entities on their performance and operation. Operations of state-owned entities will be answered by them. They're supposed to be answered, actually, by them directly, as we normally do. We, for example, next week, will be having similar session, but directly now with Dinel. Dinel will be here next week. Some of the issues that were raised, I'm not saying we should have not raised it here, but they might be more relevant when some of them Dinel's are engaging. I know they are. That, of course, the department has to account to all these entities. That's why we gave the department this opportunity to present and cover all these entities, but also some of the issues that are more operational will be much more relevant when the entity itself is accounting to this parliament committee directly as to why A and B is not taking place, or why A and B took place, and all those kind of questions. However, honorable members, thank you very much for your contribution. And now we'll have to give the DG and his team. DG, I know for a fact that some of the questions that have been asked will be more relevant when they are accounted by those entities, but let me give you to answer those questions that you will be able to answer. But I want to question the members, but we still have session, not with the department only, but with an entity, as we normally do. Thank you, DG.
No, thank you very much, Chair, and thank you for helping me out today. As you correctly pointed out, some of these questions can form a part of the discussions or the with the SOEs as they come to present. As I said, when I at the beginning of my presentation, that the entities will be presenting their annual reports when they come here, and some of these issues can be incorporated in their presentation so that they give the committee insight, so to speak, from within the organization. Chair, let me start with the question that you have asked with regard to ATNS and AXA and the role that they played in relation to Mango. The reality of our entities is that we are governed by a very strict framework in the PFMA. Each one of these entities are expected to collect revenues that are due to them and to put in place recovery mechanisms, including taking appropriate action to recover those monies. If they are not able to do so, they are found wanting, and they'll be sitting before you, Chair, with very negative audit outcomes. And that largely is what compels them to do what they need to do. And those regimes were put in place to ensure that we have sustainable entities, that they are able to collect, obviously, the revenues, that they're able to account for their cost base. That is why this SOE bill becomes so important, so that we have a regime that is much more relevant to SOEs, because there must be some kind of complementarity in the state owning all these businesses. For instance, in the aviation space, the actions as they are taken need to ensure that they are not violating the objectives that we have set for ourselves as a country. And as you correctly pointed out, that we are a developmental state. So how do these actions tally up against that very clearly intended description of our state? So raising third points there, Chair, and I mean, at some point that it can really be a discussion on itself, for instance, to have a sense of what is how much do each state-owned entity owe to the other, and how do we deal with instances where you have distressed SOEs? Within the SAA group, for instance, you have Mango, that also is a debtor to SAA Technical. There's a couple of hundreds of millions of clients that are owed there. So how do you deal with that? For instance, you have SAA Technical that has received advance payment from SAA to enable that its aircraft are maintained. So how do you deal with that situation when SAA enters a business rescue as it did? So those are the dynamics, and in relation to Mango, the biggest creditors are other state-owned entities. So that in itself is a topic in itself that needs to be discussed at some point within the frameworks that we have agreed describes the kind of state that we want to have. Jeff, I must also say that some of the questions that have been asked, it's a whole presentation itself. It's a whole discussion in itself. And in some instances, you find that it requires input from other parts of government. Now, there was a question asked, Chair, I think it was Dr. Gumede, as to how can this committee help us out? For instance, let's take land claims, which Nema Clark referred to. That is a process that is unfolding in another government department. And I would want to think that the portfolio committee that's overseeing agriculture, land reform, and land restitution is also interested in ensuring that these land claims are settled, because there are communities that literally have been waiting for these to be addressed since 1998 in some instances. And we'd like to have those that are now almost 20 years down the line. There are people that we're hoping that before they pass on, that these the lands of their ancestors would have been restored to them. So this portfolio will engage with that committee to have a better sense of what is unfolding within those departments. Of course, we'll have similar engagements at both departmental and ministerial level, should those address. But at times, an inquiry from your side can help in at least giving clarity on timelines. As Dr. Gumede said, to say, how do you come back as we do regular reporting to speak to those timelines. We say that, you know, like we have this incident at Mutupi, how do we come back and say the report has been done, actions have been taken where negligence has been identified, where there are systems and procedures that needs to be improved, that has happened, what is the cost of that exercise, and how do you ensure that in the future these sort of things do not happen. So we agree fully there. And in a way, through the questions that were asked, literally the whole agenda of the department was covered. So now how do we then, as we report, not only now but in the future, ensure that we package those such that we're able to respond to some of these questions that have come up. That's something that we'll also have a close look at. Chair, we appreciate the very positive comments from Honorable Mkhwanazi, on the question of appointments, those appointments are continue to unfold in the department. We have had two iterations of publication of advertisements, and then and that process unfolding, and some sense of stability is coming into the department. There's some areas that we have ensured up both with the new appointments as well as resources that have been seconded from various stakeholders. On the audit outcome, we will get an unqualified audit this year. There still remains some areas in terms of our reporting, in terms of annual financial statements, that we need to improve on. Some of the capabilities among our Midland senior management oversight capabilities have been cited for improvement going forward. And if you were to ask us relative to the last financial year where we are, we have moved sideways. We have not declined, nor have we improved. And there is still a lot of work that we need to do in the department in improving the procedures that inform our business. So that's what I will say to the honourable member on that one. With regard to board members, the vetting of that in terms of the risk integrity, I'll ask Makube later on to just speak to that. The progress that we are doing on the SOE bill as well, Makube will also speak to it. Now, Chair, we have raised in the past, we have said we need to have a session on forensic reports just to give feedback on that. I think the committee may also want to invite the SIU on the work that they are doing in our SOEs in line with the proclamation, so that you can have a sense of how far they have gone and what has been handed over to the less law enforcement agencies and what has been prepared for accountability in terms of the criminal system as well as civil actions that have been taken. It would be good for the committee to have that presentation. So what we can agree is that the committee we'll set aside time, then we'll come to another. I think at times also it may be useful as well to get a sense from the criminal justice component and maybe get the portfolio committee's consent to also the government give a report, because there has been a watching brief from them, for instance, on the Zondo Commission to say, what are you doing with regard to what has been raised there? So what action has been taken? So that, because unfortunately, we stand in line with everyone to get feedback from them, but I think with the assistance of the committee, we can be able to jump the queue. The Mutupi report, Chair, there's been questions asked in terms of when should the report be prepared. I'm just give the engineers as well as the Department of Labor time to do their work. And once they have produced that, unfortunately, you can't put timelines to these, because as you open up, as you investigate, then there's various tests that you need to do and so on. So let's allow that process to run its course. But where there are any indication of what has happened, as is the case, management will take action as required, as you've seen. There's been suspensions that have been done. So unfortunately, we cannot give firm answers at present. Also, there were questions asked around costs of repair. There has been some early indications of what may be also speculation of what would be the cost of repair of that. But I think that once the recovery manager is completed his work, we'll have a sense of what is involved there and what will be the impact, for instance, on the availability. Now, each one of these units deliver about 800 megawatts. So it's a huge chunk of capacity that has been lost. And hopefully the recovery will happen fairly soon. But Mamkon has asked about load shedding and load reduction. Of course, load shedding happens when the capacity that's available on a grid is less than the demand. So what then happens is that some of that demand must be taken out to ensure that you have a stable system. But load reduction happens at the distribution level when, for instance, you have some of the illegal connections that, for instance, that we are having, where the capacity that was put in place in terms of the wires to deliver the electricity is less than what is being connected, and it's a symptom of the state of our municipalities. Inability to plan for a new settlements, be they informal or formal, and be able to provide services on time, including improvement on the infrastructure to deliver that additional supply. So that's the distinction. That's how we describe it. Of course, on the part of the user, there's no difference. All that they know is that they are not receiving service. And of course, what it means is that the particular interventions that are from ESCOM or from municipality that are required. Of course, ESCOM does what it can, but in most instances, finds itself its hands tied because of some municipalities, for instance, are not paying for services. So they're not paying for services. The supply cannot be sustained. So those are the issues that we also, they would require assistance from the community, for instance, the program that oversees our local government to say, what is being put in place? What instruments are available to ensure that municipalities are run properly? What are you doing from your side with the reports that the AG has released on our municipalities, in the same way that this committee interrogates the audit reports on the SOEs that are in the portfolio of public enterprise. The same expectation should be there that the municipalities also are being addressed as we do by SOEs by COGTA. And in that way, are they appointing the right people into positions? Is financial management the way it should be, including ensuring that those bulk service providers, whether it's electricity or water, are being paid so they continue to provide services? Are they ensuring that reticulation business is being properly taken care of, such that we don't have load reduction? So that's some of the tough discussions that needs to happen at all across the legs of our government to ensure that good service is restored to our people and trust in leadership is also restored. Derek Achelia has put 22 issues before us, and some of these are as I said, requires a whole session in themselves. What we sought to do was to share as much as we can, Chair. Therefore, the length of the presentation, because we had a number of questions to ask, and we needed to do justice to them in answering them. So we apologize for the length of the presentation. In the same way, answering these questions will take some time because it's quite a lot that has been put before us. And as you have correctly said, Chair, some of these will be answered by the SOEs as they come. Examples of centralized and decentralized models. We have a whole presentation, Chair, that we can make to the committee so that we can just show those what's happening around the world with regard to government shareholder management. There are various entities as well, including multilateral institutions, which we think would also be interested to share some of their thinking from what they observe, so to get also third party views on what we'll be saying to you. Since the OECD does a lot of work in this area, we are an associate member, so we also get to the benefit of the research that they do. I think the solutions to the challenges that are plaguing our SOEs, it's not an issue of private sector or public sector. And we've seen that the public entities can be well run. And some of the biggest corporations in the world, the most profitable businesses are publicly owned, in that they are owned through government. So what we should be doing, we should be looking for the best solution available. As Deng Xiaoping, the former leader of China, said, it doesn't matter the color of the cat. Whether it's black or white, does not matter. What it must do, it must catch mice. In the same way, whether we have the public sector, the private sector, alone or in partnership, as long as services are delivered to our people in a cost-effective way, and we have the services that business can rely on, that is what we should be aiming for. And when you look at some of the countries that have been able to turn around their entities, state-owned entities around the world, they said, let's bring in some of the discipline, including on governance that we have in the private sector, including partially listing some of these, and so that we benefit from the know-how that is in that particular space. Let's enter into joint venture partnerships in the private sector to deliver public goods. Of course, while ensuring that the control of strategic assets is not lost to the state. So we need to also craft our own model in that regard. And the SOE bill development process should help us a great deal towards that. The lessons from the commission, I think that what did the chair, Dr. Kachalia, was saying, let that be brought to the committee if assistance is required from the department into summarizing those. We're quite happy to do that, but it can be guided as to how the committee would want to deal with that. Alex, we have considered in the report that the businesses are not sustainable yet, and sustainability, obviously, we must have a defendable balance sheet to start with. Once run, must have a good balance sheet with a positive net profit. But on the cash flow front, things are looking a lot better than they have been in the past. That's the message that we're seeking to bring across. But more, of course, still needs to be done. And the issues around the communities agree that they are very important. Details and time frames that have been requested. That's where the committee as well, liaising with the counterparts that are in grant reform, can help out in terms of the administration, which we are not overseeing and are taken by someone, by our counterparts. How is that flowing? Diamond sales, and so we have had the Govado report, which was a table that at Zondo Commission. There are consequences that have flowed from that, including some of the managers that were kicked out of the business, I must say they continue to put up a fight, including at the CCMA. So we are obviously dealing with that matter accordingly. The issues of IT systems not available, then this is referring to Transnet and the cost thereof. In an appropriate time, that can be done. What can happen, Chair, as Transnet comes to present, some of those can be dealt with, or they can be requested to provide more information. I've spoken to Mr. P. The cost of mitigation has been shared, and it ranges anywhere from about 890 billion rand to 300 billion rand in terms of complying with the Department of Environmental Affairs minimum standards, minimum emission standards. The source of funding, it has to come from the tariff, and that's when the cost reflectivity issue comes in. But to pay for that, if you load it onto the tariff, it means the users will experience a higher cost. So what do we do? In some instances, of course, retiring of some of the power stations earlier will help in mitigating that cost, and maybe the money can be used towards bringing in newer technology with less emissions. That is some of the issues in the presentation that I referred to earlier that Mr. Bereida made, that the Academy of Engineers will help in terms of getting the committee to understand some of the challenges or the balancing that needs to be made in addressing some of these complex issues. And in itself, that is a whole presentation that could be made here. We do not have the information on the diesel costs and how it's been funded. That is at present, but we can provide it, provide the information after the meeting. I'll ask the energy team here to put together some information to yourself, the chair. This is the OEM of the generator. One of the colleagues I don't see our say on here, and Toby, but we'll get to the information on who the OEM is that has been brought in. But obviously, a power station is quite a complex assembly of various components, some of them with their own OEM. So invariably, at the lower tier level, system tier levels, there will be others that will be brought in. The RDM chair was referred to. It has turned out it has been a good investment. It has brought in quite a lot of export business to the country. DNL has gotten some dividends in the past from that particular shareholding. Obviously, going forward, the what's going to be important for DNL and RDM is the markets that we serve, and whether, because we have had some challenges with regard to the arms control regime in terms of how we sell, so that that is an issue that we need to be able to address. The sources of funding for the SEPs are going to, at the right time, that information will be shared. We have a preferred SEP, but what we do not have yet is we don't assign the agreement, and we do not really, the shareholders are putting money from internally derived cash flow, or they go to the bank or to a funder or something to provide the funding. I think in due course, the SEP will be able to share with South Africans that sources of funding, but also we should recall that they are also a private entity, and there's any suspicion that the funds are coming from a government entity, questions can be put to that government entity and the process that they would have followed in inviting the particular customer, obviously within the confines of their own policies and the law. So, but we do not have that information. We don't know what is the source of funding of the SEPs is present, because the process or the form of what the form the funding will come through as. Mango Chair is, I think the question Mr. Kateri asked whether there will still be a burden, there will continue to be a burden on other parts of SAA in terms of provision of services. I think if you have an integrated group and it remains within an integrated group, I think it's only fair that maintenance is provided by SAA Technical. You know, if you have a business that does a cleaning of houses, I think you would want to utilize that in cleaning your own house. And of course, the fair question that's being asked is that even when it comes to the other way around in terms of utilization, we're getting value for service, and it's a fair question. But and then going back to the question that the chairperson has asked, you want to be able to get synergies from your various holdings if you are government and you have a portfolio of SOEs. There's an express issue in Parliament, and that was more directed to the committee than to us, House Chair. The Transnet opportunities that have been in what has been asked, there's various questions that Ms. Kachelia asked. What literally is the question is, what are we offering the private sector? And in terms of the partnerships that are noted, those discussions, there is an RFI, request for information process that Transnet will be undertaking to test the market in terms of whether what we have to offer, is it the right, is what the market is looking for? What kind of solutions, both technical and financial, would be appropriate for what we are seeking to do, and so on. So those answers, those questions, I think are a bit premature at present. I think let's allow the processes within Transnet to run their proper course. Another question, I think the CADA deployment statement was more of a comment than a question. So, I think it's above my pay grade as well. So I'll leave it to those above me to deal with that at an appropriate time. With regard to risk management, including dealing with the kind of attacks that Transnet had, I think it's one of our entities that is quite capable and has very mature systems in place. And the fact that we are able to mobilize not only internal resources, but private sector resources to help us out in addressing the attack, I think it shows the capability that is there. And as my minister indicated on Monday in his press conference to the country, that there are some colleagues at Transnet that literally spend days without sleeping to ensure that the damage from the attack is mitigated against. So that's something that we commend, and also other operators from around the world have also commended Transnet's reaction and the methodology or strategy that was utilized. Including shutting down the system as a whole and bringing it back as they clean up various portions of it. I think that we need to be proud of the organization in that regard. Member, we have presented 6 options in the past to the committee, and we had indicated that we were engaged in DMRE at the time on one of those options. That process has not borne fruit. We are looking at alternatives to that solution, and we are hoping that we can get we can make some headway before the end of this financial year. So I hope that satisfies your question with regard to timelines. Load shedding, you said that it is not on the list. Largely that load shedding is a product of the maintenance in a roundabout way, that have dealt with, and largely nothing in the, what we have raised. We are saying that you know, the generation capacity that we have needs to be improved upon if this particular issue is going to be addressed in the future, on top of the maintenance work that should be done. Assisting the SOEs, our job on the with regard to the policy departments to ensure that the right policies are in place to support the work of our entities, whether is there is government support that is required financially, we ensure that it's mobilized accordingly. But most importantly, we ensure that the promises that our SOEs make to the public through the shoulder compact, as well as through the corporate plans that are developed, that those are implemented. And where intervention is required from the minister as the shoulder representative, ensure that that is raised accordingly. The reality of our entities is that they come from a bad place. They come from an era where they were repurposed to serve narrow interests, where capital was diverted away, and they were hollowed out in the process. We are slowly pulling them out of that hole, as we have seen with SAA. SAA went into business rescue. It has emerged out of business rescue. It is being prepared for a private sector to play a leading role in the entity. And that should be commended. We don't say much about SAFCO, but it also had found itself in a bad place. We have put in a very strong board there. There's a very strong executive that was appointed by that board. The portfolio committee visited operations and got some very good feedback from the committee in terms of where the business is at. So some, there are some, I'll say some positives in the portfolio that would say need to be recognized. I've answered the question on Medupi, and also in terms of how long it will take to address that. The salaries payment at Dinel, that is dependent on securing funding. We have been with the 2020, or rather the 2021-22 MTEP process, a bid for cash within the system. We were not successful. We are doing again during this year to find funds to restructure the business. That's what is important. And we want to also say that it's important we get these entities to a point where they are able to meet their obligations from internally generated funds. It is not sustainable for equity injections to be paying for operational expenses. It is not a good state at all. And we need to address that. It's a difficult topic at hand, but a business must be able to take care of itself, and a business that is and there must be a return on investment, a return on equity for the investor, in this case, the South African public, through government shareholding. That's what we need to build the businesses towards. I think that's a discussion that at some point we also need to have to say what has been pumped into these entities over the years, what has it realized for the South African public, and what is also important is that the colleagues in these entities must hold management and boards also accountable, because when these businesses are mismanaged, you're sowing the seeds for the difficulties that we have found and denial in recent times, that SAA also and Mango found themselves in. And we must have those particular discussions, and there must be a broader stakeholder engagement on these issues. How much are the SEPs bringing in? That's what the due diligence decides address, begin ensuring that liabilities are taken up. It's also evaluation exercise. Figures that we had our own business plan that had a particular figure in terms of what it will take to revive SA. The pandemic has meant that we're going to have a much smaller island than we had before. So that figure has come down quite a bit. But the valuation largely will tell us how much must be brought in. And what we should also appreciate is that this asset, besides having its own challenges, is being the shares are being sold during a very bad period in the aviation market. The pandemic really, if you look at airlines across the world, it has left a lot of damage. That's what needs to be recognized. Well, I'm not sure, remember, when it says it's a surprise that Mango is in trouble, what she means. We have known that Mango has been in trouble for quite some time now, and there has been various interventions to address that particular problem. What was critical was to get funding to fund PCF. If you do not provide PCF, you end up even in an SA Express situation. If you put a business into business rescue and you do not have the funds to finance that business rescue, you end up in liquidation where everyone loses out. And that's what we had at SA Express. We had a supplier who went and put the business into business rescue, and we know what happened to them. So, and that's what we sought, that's the appeal that we made to the court to say, we had to ensure that we have the funding to fund the business rescue. And that's why it took as long as it did. Government raises funds at specific periods. We all know that. And 2.7 related to the restructuring of the subsidiaries could not come through with the adjustment budget last year. So it had to wait for the 21-22 budget for the funds to be available. That's what we have to, the constraints that we have to work within in addressing the challenges we have in our entities. And the comment on this transplant being privatized, the comment that I made earlier, that we need partnerships, we need to mobilize all capital that is in our country. If you are going to ensure that we break this cycle of low economic growth that we have had, to ensure that we create jobs for our people and that we build the confidence in them that comes with having an economic needs. We can't allow ideology, so to speak, to constrain us from acting. We can take examples from other countries, and there's a lot, many countries that we can learn from, including some of the countries in the East that have unshackled themselves from ideology, so to speak, in order to find the best solutions for their people. I've addressed the issue of cyber attacks, and when I answered Dr. Kachalia, Matt Clark also asked for the commission's reports to be shared. We'll get guidance from the committee in terms of the role that we could play. There is a framework on with DPSA that has been developed that is informing how boards and management are appointed. And there also the SOE bill to a large extent needs to deal with that particular issue in terms of ensuring it's properly coded in our law. And we also need to, and when these businesses are turned around, are successful, they will attract good people. When business get into trouble, they repel good people, and that's what we are sitting with. And we need to change that. We have seen it during as we seek obviously to fill board positions that good people that in the past have availed themselves to seven abbots. I'm not available this time. That's what we have seen. So we need to change that. Because we need skills. We need skills across our businesses to ensure that we successfully turn them around. Matlag, you referred to Brigadier Berger. I hope Brigadier Berger is presenting that docket to the NPA so that action can be taken on those implicated at Alexco. But if you can provide us with his details, we'll definitely get in touch with him to ensure that we also put pressure from our side. I'm not sure about the Rachtersfall Commission that Matlag is referring to, if you can just clarify that for us. We have the full report on the expulsion that will be shared, including that there's some suspicion that you are sharing there in terms of what could be the result of that. I think a full investigation will enlighten us. Municipalities and illegal connections, I've spoken to that, including the staff called land claims. And now capabilities agreed. Normally, the know-how is in people's hands, but there's organizations also have the know-how. The corporate knowledge. I think that's the right phrase that's normally used. You have design data, you have procedures and processes that have been coded into the organization. You have a supplier base that is known. You have test and evaluation processes that are known. And that makes it possible for a new cadre of engineers as they come in to be able to continue the work that was done by those that would have departed. But the good thing with Denal is that we are also those that have left the organization are also saying we are prepared to come back when the Denal's troubles are sorted out, because they understand the unique role that Denal plays in enabling our security forces. So we are quite comfortable that Denal will be able once restructured and the capital has to continue to do the good work that they've done in the past. But it must be led properly, of course, and that's what we'll ensure happens. The denial PMP, the issue of tax compliance, it's a denial-wide issue. Denial has been unable to emit certain statutory payments, and as our other entities that found themselves in financial challenges, and of course, we're helping where we can in that regard. The issue of the pilots, there's a settlement that has been reached with the pilots at SAA, and we are quite pleased to see that the interests of the organization was put ahead of individuals' interests, and the pilots, they would be the first ones to admit that SAA has done well by them over many years, over many decades. We have rest. Our issues in terms of the sustainability of the regulatory agreement, which has now been abandoned. We are quite happy with that as new terms and employment terms that inform employment of pilots going forward, and that's a good thing that ensures the sustainability of that business. There is a leased fleet. It's a small fleet that has been brought in to enable the start of operations. Going forward, the business plan will tell us and the new owners that have the route network that they should operate and so on. So, and as you can imagine, that's also commercially sensitive information that we need to deal with properly, because also this is a public channel that we are on here. So we don't want to compromise SAA's reemergence. Thank you, and Dr. Gumede, for the very positive comments that we have received from you, and also your request that time frames report back is what is needed Well, I can assure you, Dr. Gumede, is that there are processes across all levels to help the denial situation. We have made good traction. Therefore, we could be able to report to say that the government guaranteed obligations, we are able to get funding for those, despite the fact that our appeal for budget in the 2020 MTEC process was not successful. We have been able to get our colleagues at National Treasury to help out in that regard. I think that's a positive thing, and that shows that those interventions are working. The funding of SOEs, in terms of the various projects that they're undertaking, their own restructuring, it has to come from a combination of partnerships and also obviously from government coffers. And obviously the reality is that we are having to bid with other demands on the state. So we have to be able to show that what we are doing shall result in positive outcome for the state, that there will be new cash flows that will result. And where there are holes, operational holes that have been created, there must be innovative solutions and there must be some sacrifice from all stakeholders to fill those. That's what's happened at the SAA employees. To their credit, they said, you owe us 8 months of salaries, we'll settle for 3 months of salaries so that we give this business a chance to fly again. And that's it. I mean, that was, and from obviously employees that that also were in a difficult position themselves. But they understood that these are public funds that are being utilized. And also they understood that if the business were to disappear, it would have a wider impact on the local economy. Obviously, in this case, those economies around the airports and so on. So that was a commendable concession on their part. The transaction, the majority shareholder will be responsible for the airline going forward, we'll ensure that there is an effective leadership in place. There's a proper funding and the capital structure in place to support the airline. Of course, as the minority shareholder will also ensure that the business is goes well going forward, managed well going forward. Unfortunately, will not be in a position to provide more capital to the airline going forward. That's a very clear message that we have provided. So what that means is there's capital raising says going forward, government will not be able to participate. And that can lead to a shareholding being diluted. And that's how business is run. That's what shareholders expected to do, and if they're not able to do so, that's what happens. I think that the state of our SOEs, we should also say that there are some SOEs that are doing very well. AXA has been cited as one of the well-run entities that has been able to also pay dividends to government, and that's where we'd want our entities to get to ever. So SOEs, are they ever going to come back? They must come back. They must become stronger again. The expectations of them, we need to increase our expectations on them, at least in terms of adding to our fiscus as well through dividends. When you engage with other countries, they're able to tell you that 5% of our national revenues come from the SOEs. We should be able to give you a figure like that to say, from our SOEs, this is what we're able to contribute to the budget. That's the vision that we must have with regard to SOEs going forward. The point you're making with regard to some of the non-core assets and possible options is a fair one, but the market will tell us in terms of the response levels in relation to denial. And of course, I think that you made also a fair point with your last comment to say it's not only qualifications that matter, it's the skills, the experience that are needed. And that's why people that have been that have overseen projects in the past, have made mistakes, are so valuable because they know what not to do. But also want to give young people an opportunity to also learn from those that have walked the path before. But you've made a fair point. And that's why there's so much, we need a cross-section of qualified people, not just degree people. We need people with vocational skills as well and vocational qualifications. We have learned by doing. And that's where I'll leave it, Chair. And thank you very much for giving us this opportunity. But let me give Makobe to just speak to a couple of the points that I've asked him. Advocate.
Thank you, DG. And good day to the Chair and the honorable members. Just to talk on the issue of the vetting with regard to the risk and integrity management as raised by Honorable Mkhwanazi. We are currently conducting vetting of non-executive and executive directors of SOEs before the appointment, but the risk and integrity management framework will actually enhance this process and it will cover all the employees, but it will also introduce stringent background checks for all the employees of the SOEs. It will also prohibit SOE officials from doing business with the SOE that they work for. Now, on the issue of the SOE bill, the DG has already given details in terms of what it will cover. But firstly, we will develop the SOE policy, out of which policy then we will develop the legislation. And we are going to make sure at this time that we will comply with the timelines that has been presented by the DG. Thank you, DG.
Thank you, Chair. That's where we'll leave it from the department. Thank you.
Thank you, DG and your team. It's really appreciated the manner in which you have been able to get to all these questions. But just before we close, me. This question about Dinel and the workers, I didn't capture you, DG, giving us, because it was also my question, exactly what the department is doing currently in terms of making it a point that those workers are remunerated. Is there any process perhaps like that is you are embarking on to, for example, for the Treasury to intervene, you know, because these are people with families and so on. Is there any engagement that is taking place with the Treasury or whoever who can be in a position to rescue that situation? I didn't capture you exactly there.
Yeah, but there is a process that is unfolding. You have the MTEC process that unfolds around now where you put in a budget bid for your entities. So we are doing that. And also the joint team that is in place, we are also developing a solution to support the new business model of Dinel so that it is implemented. So that requires funding. So we are, National Treasury is part of that effort. But we are doing that in a very difficult space. We must say, Chair, that the requirement for funds for SOEs has to be also balanced with the effort that government is putting into to deal with the pandemic. We have an economy as well that has been relatively flat in terms of growth. So the result is that the revenues are not what ordinarily they should be. So it is not an easy space, Chair. I might just be honest with yourselves on that one. And we need to be sensitive to the difficult position that National Treasury finds itself in. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Thank you, Bijou. Honorable members, I think we reached the end of
our session. Unfortunately, I thought we'll be having time to get second bite. Since we're not a big number today, I thought perhaps we will be in a position to get a round two. But unfortunately, because of the comprehensive nature of the input, including the questions that were asked, I think members were very long in terms of asking questions. And now even the response had to take another long period. Therefore, by the way, we will be meeting, as from next week, starting with the DINEL, we'll be meeting these state-owned entities, and we'll be go straight to some of the issues and some specifics that you will be needing. Therefore, it's not the end of the day. We will be continuing having this session. I think we all know that we never not meet the portfolio committee as per our commitment and also our role. We always stick to our program. We'll continue engaging. On those bases, I would like to thank the department led by the Director General and the entire team that were here and make this presentation and responded to some of our questions. And we'll go further with our questions, especially those that are to do with specific issues of operation and performance to those entities as we go. Honorable members, allow me to agree that this session is adjourned. Sorry, members.
I just thought maybe the members must stay.
Sorry? I can't hear Mr. Muchumi.
I thought members should stay so that we can look at the program.
Oh, okay. We can do that. Let's release the department then.
Thank you, Chair.
Honorable members, can Mr. Muchumi so far put the program on the screen? I know we all have, if it's possible, can you put the program there? Yes, Honorable, this is the program, which is starting on Wednesday, the 18th, today, of which we had this session, briefing by the Department of Public Enterprise on progress update on addressing governance and financial challenges of state-owned companies. We particularly got the information around the recent explosion at Metupi, Transnet, National Ports Authority, liquidation of DINEL, liquidation of South African Express, implementation of SAA business rescue plan. Yeah, those issues we dealt with. On the 25th of Wednesday, which is next week, we'll have a joint meeting with the Select Committee and the Public Enterprise to get a briefing by DINEL on progress updates regarding implementation of the turnaround strategy. That will be next week. On the 1st of Wednesday, the following week, then we'll be getting a briefing by SAA on business issue processes. And of course, Mango aligned and updated them. And then on the 8th, it will be ESCOM. It will be ESCOM, and then we'll get direct briefing as to what happened to Mutupi, and including Kusile and so on. And then we go on the 15th, it will be the rural development, or it will be a briefing by Department of Enterprise and Department of Rural Development and Land Reform on the unresolved land claims at SAFCOL and including at Alexco. And then on the 22nd Wednesday, the following week, it will be a briefing by Auditor General on the audit outcomes for the 2020 and 2021 financial year. And then the 29th, then considering and adoption the budgetary review and recommendations report. That's the program, honorable members, of this quarter. Can we get a mover and a seconder, or any amendment needed? Honorable members?
Honorable Chair, my hand is up.
Okay, Honorable Mkwanazi, followed by Honorable Gumede.
Thanks, Chair. When I look at the program, I think most of the issues that we have raised today will be covered, especially on the operation issues. I then move for the adoption of the program. Thank you.
Honorable Gumede. Honorable Gumede.
Chair, can you hear me?
I can hear you now. Otherwise, okay. I didn't hear you previously. Yeah.
No, it's a support touch, like always. I'm moving to support the motion by Honorable Mkwanazi with the hope that we'll get a bite on the feedback on questions that have been asked today. Thank you very much, Chair.
Okay. That's... The program, honorable members, I hope we all agree. Thank you so much. The meeting is adjourned, therefore.
Thank you, Chair. Bye-bye.
Aye.
Thank you.